Quorum. Okay. We have a quorum. It is, wait, quick, 4:02. And I would like to call the, what date is this? August 11th, 2022, Environmental Services Advisory Committee to order. Okay. Let me get this got it thing out of the way. All right. Roll call. Elvira Suarez Din.
Here.
I see you. Alfredo Riza.
Here.
Ryan Thomas.
Here.
Hi, Ryan. Yolanda Hello. Herrera.
Here.
Chris Yarder present. Margo Garcia, not yet, right? Okay. Michael Harrier.
Here.
And Susanna Shippers.
Here.
And Trevor Ledbetter will be absent from this meeting. Okay. Let's move on to the approval of minutes. We'll have to table the June 9th, 2022 minutes again, and I'm sure we'll get that next time. So did everybody get a chance to look over the July 14th minutes? And let me know if there's any additions or corrections that you think need to be made to the minutes.
I noticed something in the subcommittee report under the finance committee.
Okay.
The word in there uses mange instead of manage.
Oh, okay. So a typo?
Yes, a typo.
Yeah. Anyone else? Okay, so if there are no additions or corrections to the minutes, we'll accept the July 14, 2022 minutes as corrected. Item three, chairperson's report. I don't really have one. So we'll move right along. To item four, director's report, and I assume that's you, Pat?
That would be, but Madam Chair, if I don't mind changing that, if we could have the finance, because I know she has to get to a meeting. Would we mind having her do that, and then I'll do mine after that?
Oh, sure. I was going to scoot her up after your report, but let's go ahead and scoot her up to item four. So, Victoria.
Yes, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay.
So for the financial report, is that something you, I do not have it prepared. Thank you, Brittany.
Good. Okay.
Sorry if it's a little noisy where I'm at. Okay, so with the financial report, I was able to get a little more information since the last one, and also the one from last month, you were sent the revised version because there was a slight error on that one with the variance, but so that was the only change made to that. On this report, I was able to get a little more information regarding, I know the adopted budget is kind of off from what it usually is because the salaries were consolidated. So I was able to get more information about where those budgets lie and what it contains and what salaries they contain. So first we'll start obviously with the revenues. What I have so far, for the beginning of the fiscal year, I was able to pull the 22 actuals, and then I have the 23 adopted budget, and then the fiscal year 23 actuals as of August 5th. Obviously not much happening yet, but I did want to provide that. We'll be able to get more information and be able to determine more trends, obviously, as the year goes on, and we'll be able to provide projections probably starting in the third quarter. And we'll see how that goes with our new financial system coming in October. But this is what we have for revenue so far on task. I don't see anything out of line so far. So, yeah, I guess we wanted to go to the next page. So here are the expenditure budget. So the salary budgets were consolidated into ES administration and O&M groundwater protection. So I was able to dive into the budget to determine where those were. So the collections budgets, the residential, commercial, brush and bulky collections are all in that number for the fiscal year 23 adopted under O&M groundwater protection. I can assure you this will probably make a lot more sense when we come into Workday. As I said, it's a chart of account conversion, which is a reason for these first 3 months of the fiscal year that it looks like this. But when it goes into Workday, it'll all ideally make more sense. And I'm sure there'll be a transition period while we learn those that new reporting function. And the reports are going to look different, I'm going to assume, in the new system, even though the underlying numbers and the bottom line adopted budget remains the same.
And Victoria, that's the EnerGov system, right? That you're talking about? Or what?
No, this is Workday that we're moving into.
Oh,
so
okay.
This is our financial system.
Well, that's part. Yeah, okay, got it.
Yeah. So, and we're our current financial system is called Advantage, and yeah, it's in a whole new chart of accounts. And so that's why, as I said, it looks a little off for these first few months, but the underlying figures and the bottom line remains the same. So, I also noticed that the customer support and the recycling salaries are in under ES administration. So that's where you see the big variance between the 22 adopted and the 23 adopted. So even though on this, I did not include the 22 adopted, but you might see the actual expenses will still hit where they normally would have. So as I said, I wish I could give a little more detail on that, and I should be able to once we convert into the new system in October. So any questions on this page or on that process in general?
Victoria, can you give us the numbers as well? Just read the numbers out so we all know where we're at.
The numbers for the...
The actual and the... Mm-hmm. That would help you out, right, Ryan? Yes. Okay.
Yes, I'm sorry. So do you want me to go down the line and read the actuals? Adopted?
No. Oh. Just for the ones that you're just hitting and emphasizing.
Right. Yes, of course. So the O&M groundwater protection is where the salary objects are for the collections, residential and brush and bulky. The 22 actuals, and just as an example for last year, was 1.3 million. And then the fiscal year 23 adopted budget is 9.2 million. So that's where you can see a big, why is that budget so high in 23? And that's because it contains all the salary budget for the collections drivers. So then when the expenses come through, you're actually gonna see them under fiscal year 23 actuals where they're supposed to be. So that it's kind of a unusual setup, but at the end of the day, we're gonna be looking at the bottom line on these, especially when it converts into Workday, and all of the expenses are posting where they should as far as where each division lies for the salary objects. And yeah, that's just, yeah, what I have here, as I said, again, is the fiscal year 22 actuals, the 23 adopted budget and the 23 actuals, which only contains the first month's worth of expenses.
Victoria, I have a question. Mm-hmm. On that O&M, on the O&M groundwater protection, mm-hmm. I understand that, everything's rolled into that category. Where is it rolling from? Because there must be an offset.
So it's rolling from, so the O&M groundwater protection, it's rolled into that, but it's rolling from the salary objects are rolling from the residential collections line, the brush and bulky, and the commercial collections.
So if I look at all of those, they should equal the increase in the O&M.
If you look at the 22 adopted, which is in the other report from last month,
right.
Then yes, but except for there are some variances, obviously it's been,
right.
There was increase in the driver's pay. So it's not going to be a dollar to dollar match, but it will definitely be close closer to
right. I just want to make sure I wanted to see where it's rolling from, because I don't want to, you know, say, wait a minute, they got $8 million increase in, you know, salaries. What?
Exactly. So yeah, that's why I definitely want to explain it and put in the notes of this report, where on each one under residential collections is a salary budget consolidated in O&M groundwater. So I tried to make the link so that you'll be able to see where it was and where it went to. And then you should be able to do that comparison when you're looking at June's report, which has the 22 adopted. And hopefully you'll be able to tie all those notes together.
Thank you.
Sure.
Crazy.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. What is citywide brownfields?
That is our EPA program. Pat, did you want to speak to that? They probably
The brownfield program is actually EPA that they fund us. That they we just received $1 million grant from EPA to actually work on sites that actually are considered contaminated and underutilized properties that may be potential properties if we do a phase one or phase two cleanups that can actually be sold or utilized or rejuvenated. For the prime example is downtown. You might have had an area that had a fuel station at one time and they moved out and no one is buying that property because worried about the cleanup. We go in there with the grant that we have and able to do an assessment of the facility and make it now where it's suitable for someone to purchase and develop it. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, that answers my question.
Right, were there any other questions on this page? All right, and go to the next. And this is just the remaining expenditure budgets. We have, that is more on the brownfields, BF assessment and then BF Grant Petroleum. Those are, and that I have those on there as a placeholder because there were 22 actuals in that line. The brownfield budget is one that was kind of all over the place with the conversion, but it will, because it is a grant and the workday system looks at, you know, grant and operating budgets a bit different. So, but the funds are there and the adopted budget is there. You'll start seeing those expenses come in. And yeah, it's the, this also contains the budget for the EGSD satellite, including the finance portion, procurement, and HR. So, not a lot of variance on this one or surprises. Any questions on this?
I was muted. I was wondering if the we've finally gotten the final amounts for the administrative service charges. There had been at the last discussion of the finance committee, some of those were not finalized yet. You didn't know exactly what they were going to be.
Though they should be finalized at this point. The June report, and again, my apologies, that third column for the surplus variance should not be on there. But the 22 adopted, the fiscal year 22 actuals and the 23 adopted. All right. So I can get that figure to you because I believe the June report, I corrected it, but it might not have had the updated figures at that time. So I still, there's still going to be an official fiscal year end report that I'll be providing soon, and it'll have those final figures, but it did come through and it's exactly as budgeted. So,
okay, good.
Okay, so if we wanted
Thanks,
to go,
Vicky.
Mm-hmm. If we wanted to go to page four, I believe that's the capital projects. So there was a slight increase to the capital budget. It went from 8.5 million to 13.8 million this year. A lot of that is due to the Self 4B addition. Yep. Any questions on the capital budget? Okay. Actually, this, Brittany, this is the June report. That, no wonder I thought I really messed this up. I think you started with the July and then we went back to the June when you pulled it back up. There we go.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I'm feeling better now. Wow.
We're back to July.
I'm sorry. Okay. I wanted to pull the agenda out so I can see the agenda, and that's why it switched tabs.
Yes. Yeah, I feel better now. But okay. So, yeah, that makes much more sense. But then actually, you were able to see the administrative service charge on that report did hit. And there it is as well, the 5.7 million. We're expecting 5.9 million to be expensed this year for that, and that's just the typical 5% increase we've been that's just what we have been agreed upon with water to pay for that at this time. So, and if we could go to the capital, so not a lot of activity yet, but we are definitely expecting more as the year goes on. I put the computer upgrade on there just because there were actuals from, but that is complete, but the rest are all still active. Any questions on the capital? In the last page, we have code enforcement and graffiti abatement, a slight increase to their budget, again, due to salary for the most part, but they came just about at budget last year. Any questions on this? Okay, that's the July financial report. Any questions on the document overall or in general?
Congratulations, Vicki. You passed the test. That was a test back there for you to get the right slides.
Right. It took me. I was just about to go kick myself when I was meeting, but I'm glad. Switcheroo. But no, that's thank you very much. But.
So Vicki, the numbers on the June report, mm-hmm. are those the final numbers, or is there one more report coming?
There'll be one more report coming. There's not going to be much change to it. We are still producing the annual financial report, and there's always adjustments to be made, audit adjustments, but I don't expect any changes to the actuals. It's not completely finalized. It's just, I call it audited at this point. It's basically over.
Okay.
But that's just standard practice to go into the period 13 and a period 14 adjustments. And that's where we're at right now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So by October, is that when this is all going to go into effect? Will everything be in the right place?
I hope so. Yes, that is the intent. So
okay.
When we get to October 1st, I'll be able to dive in and look at it, and it should make, and I've been involved with the testing workday. It's going to be a great system. It's just going to be, as I said, a period of adjustment because it is a complete change of chart of accounts. So yes, I've seen the reporting capabilities and what it's able to do, and it's going to be a vast improvement. And yeah, I look forward to presenting those SEER reports from that system. And it should make sense how this chart of accounts is set up.
Well, welcome to the 21st century.
Right? Thanks. It's nice here. They have cell phones and stuff. So yeah. All right.
Any other questions? So we'll let you take off.
Vicki? I appreciate you fitting me in earlier. Bye, guys. Thank you.
All right. Good seeing you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. So Pat, you're up. I guess this will be item 5.
Actually, Madam Chair, I have to defer again, if you don't mind. If we could have HDR do their quick presentation, I'll give you a recap after they get a chance to talk about it.
Of course they can do that.
Yeah, so introduce that. You know, Andrea Ramirez, I don't know if you know her, she's with HDR. They're actually the group that is doing the zero waste roadmap. So I would defer to Andrea, can actually give us an update as to where we're at on the zero waste program.
Sure, yeah, thanks, Pat. So I'm Andrea Ramirez. I work in the HDR Tucson office, and I'm the project manager for the zero waste roadmap. And we also have a team working on this project, local professionals in Tucson and Phoenix, and then also solid waste subject matter experts and other staff around the country that are all really excited to be part of this with the city. And I appreciate the chance to give you all an update today. I'm guessing that you guys have talked about before, the general strategy of doing kind of three phases where there's a zero waste roadmap. And the second phase would be the zero waste plan. And the third phase would be implementing the plan. So this is the first phase, the roadmap. And we're looking at where we are and then where we want to get to and all the different ways that we could potentially get there for reaching our zero waste goals. And I think Brittany had the two reports up that should have been sent around to you guys. The first one was the current conditions assessment. That's the where we are. That's the overview of the city's existing facilities and services and focus on the Los Reales Sustainability Campus and all the material that the city touches, either through collection or processing. And then the other report that you guys should have received is the Aspirational Programs and Best Practices report. And that was looking at other cities and how they have been working towards their zero waste goals and seeing if there are some lessons learned that we can apply if they would work well, or we can learn from them for Tucson. And then we're finishing up right now the request for information, the RFI for alternative uses of waste material at the Los Reales Sustainability Campus. That was a call out to companies and organizations that have innovative waste processing technologies or beneficial reuse programs that are interested in partnering and with the city and operating at the sustainability campus. So we threw a pretty wide net to over 200 contacts that we have in the industry and then local contacts as well, and invited them to respond. We got 27 responses, which is actually a really great number, really great response rate, and pretty diverse responses as well. They range from the smaller local nonprofits looking to do programs with the city, and then also all the way to international companies that have facilities operating around the globe. And we're currently doing the review of those, and that information will also inform some future reports and some future work for the city. And we have two other reports in process right now. The first is a near-term development options report looking at mostly operations and services where there could be changes made in the near term in the next couple of years that could improve diversion and bring the city closer to their zero waste goals. The other one is a processing technology overview. So it's a little bit more long-term because these would be facilities or processing technologies that could be established at the sustainability campus. So it'd be a little bit more with design and construction and permitting before those would be operational, but we're looking at how that could impact diversion as well. And then we're also working on some communication and outreach projects. We are doing a couple workshops we'll do for the city and then for stakeholders to talk about the zero waste roadmap, what we've learned so far in our work, and talk about where that's going and get some feedback. And then we're also going to do some public engagement for just now, it's just a survey. It's going to be online. We'll also have some printed copies to expand the outreach for those that can't do the online version and get some input from the public. And we're working on developing those questions right now. And then all of this work will come together in the final zero waste roadmap product. It'll be a report and a placemat that's kind of easy at a glance information, and that'll be available to the public. And that will be, we're targeting December for getting that done.
So that's when good. You do these reports, do you have a list of who all's involved that we could just have to look at? You know, all the people that have given you information towards these reports, and who writes these up?
Our staff does. HGR.
Okay. Yes. Okay. I wasn't sure. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Do you mean a list of staff, or do you mean references where we got the information?
I guess I just wanted a little more detail on the nonprofit, local contacts. I guess you don't need to list all 200 of them. But I just would like to just have an idea who, you know, some of these people are that are making inputs to our zero waste.
Oh, well, the 200 contacts were invited to respond to the RFI. So they're not necessarily having input just because we told them about it. It would be the 27 responses that actually sent information that we're reviewing, the city's reviewing, and okay. that could be taken into consideration, but not necessarily will be.
Okay.
If that makes sense. And Pat, I don't know if you have any clarification you want to add, but jump in.
Margo, do you have a question?
Yeah, several. I still think it would be interesting to have a list of the staff that actually worked on these reports with something about them. I mean, otherwise they seem so, I don't know, from out of the ether. There's like no one attached to it. Also, looking at the breadth of experiences and the kinds of backgrounds of the people that you've brought together, because we know that this solid waste management, especially the diversion, is a very broad field. So it's not just civil engineers, but it's, you know, a whole lot of folks. And so I really would like to see each report, you know, 10 or 15 major contributors, you know, who worked on it and a little bit about them. The other question I had, and I'm sorry I didn't get to read them as carefully as I had hoped to because of some family issues that have come up, but I was really kind of shocked at our low diversion rate. 4% seems to me incredibly low. Can you put that into context of, you know, you used Phoenix's materials as your as the background rather than doing our own study of what goes into the landfill. Can you talk a little bit about 4%?
Yeah, and just to clarify, we did use an older waste characterization from Tucson, but Phoenix had done some more recent ones. So we sort of blended those together to get an idea for the interim until another waste characterization is done. It is a low rate. I think that especially in this area, there's a lot going on that's maybe not being tracked right now. So it's not a full picture, and that'll be part of the discussion as we go forward and in the zero waste plan, what kind of tracking and metrics will be used to track progress and really get an idea of what's going on around the city. But we, for this one, it's focused on what goes through the landfill and then also what's being taken to the MRF by the city. So it's a little, it's a narrow, it's a narrow band, I guess, to look at, but that's what we have the tracking for right now.
So that's the actual numbers for us. So you're saying things like Freecycle or Craigslist or all those diversionary programs are simply missing.
Or the private facilities. Yeah. Private, like the construction demolition stores. Waste. Yeah.
All the thrift stores that people take things to. That's also missing.
So that is a challenge, Margo, when you're trying to gather this information and this data, you're only able to provide that information on data that we're receiving or able to capture. Mm-hmm. And that's what's interesting about these reports that you get them is that how do we receive or gather all that data so we can get a true number? With what information we have in front of us, it's at 4%. But that's okay, because mm-hmm. when we, at the end of the road, when we do make these changes, we're only going to use that same information to gather and see that needle move. If it was from 4% to 6% or whatever, we're going to pull it from the same. We don't want to change what we're gathering that information, because then it's not going to be a true analysis.
Right. But I think, you know, it's, as I say, it's sort of shocking when you look at all the thousands, hundreds of thousands of tons that are going through, that we're only, even just in the recycling program, that it's, I guess I hadn't fully appreciated how, what a low number where we are. And here we worry about, you know, 20,000 pounds of contamination when we're missing 100,000 pounds of materials that could be being recycled. I think of cities like San Francisco and so forth, who are looking at 70 and 80% diversion. I know that they've not reached that, and there have been a lot of hiccups along that road, but I mean, when you think of that as their aspirational level, we're really out in the boondocks. We're really far behind. So that really struck me.
If I could just add on that too, yeah. I think it is also a little bit, since it is what the city is processing and collecting, because Los Reales is a regional facility. You're getting all of the waste from around the region, but the recycling facility is private, of course. So we're not tracking anything else that's going to the recycling facility or other that's not coming through the city or that's going to other recycling facilities in the area that maybe they're still taking the waste to Los Reales. But then that's back to the tracking. And do you have control over that for tracking or increasing diversion or mandating anything?
So when we look at what's going into the MRF, let's just take Republic, who's going through the foothills or Oro Valley. Are we counting at all what recycling they're picking up, if any, as part of that diversion?
No.
No. So we're only looking at the city's contribution to the MRF.
Correct.
So isn't that a little bit apples and oranges then, when you're looking at Los Reales as a regional facility, but you're looking at the diversion only within the city limits?
It is tricky, yeah. Yeah, that's why in the report, there's a discussion of a couple different ways that we could look at it. And it gives a couple different diversion rates. And it's all about even other cities around the country, right? It's all how they draw the line, they draw the box around what they can quantify and track, and then they have their number and that's what they work with. So some cities calculate it differently. Some of them have very complicated equations where they estimate things and try and get contributions from other entities. And like California, for example, has a lot that you have to report. So if you have any haulers in the area, they're tracking every single ton and it's all reported up to the state level. So they have those numbers, but it's definitely a challenge. It's definitely a challenge trying to figure out a representative amount.
Well, why wouldn't it be more accurate to compare our recycling to what the city trucks put into the landfill? What the city trucks put into the landfill from only the city. So it bothers me that we're comparing, you know, all of Pima County, but we're only counting the recycling from our area. I guess I want the recycling number to be higher, and I'm frustrated by the 4%. I mean, you know, obviously you can count it any way you want, but it seems to me a little disingenuous to put it so low.
Yeah, it's actually in there both ways. I don't have that particular paragraph.
I guess I missed.
I think I want to say that the 4% was looking at the regional amount, and then it's still a pretty low number, even if you look at collections, but it is slightly better.
It is. The diversion would be a little bit higher, somewhat higher, if it was looking just at Tucson itself.
I mean, would it be up to 7%? Would it be double?
I think when we looked at it, and you could correct me, Dre, if we did look at it, I want to say I thought it was closer to like 8.5%.
Yeah, Brittany, can you bring up, I saw you have the report on your computer.
I think we could go.
Back to you, Margaret, too.
Okay. Right. I was just really, really curious about that as someone who's been in the Waste Diversion Committee and really tracking this over the time, you know, as to what's actually going on and what kind of an impact we're making. And the point is, it's not very big. It's pretty small. We got a long ways to go to get to zero. So anyway, that's my comments, is that it just is shocking.
So back to you, Andrea. Are you done with this going through, or you have more to say to us?
No, that was the overview. So if there's any other questions, or, you know, I'm beginning of periodic updates, I think. So keep you guys updated as reports come out.
Okay. When will the next report come?
We will have a draft of the next two reports to the city for review in early September. Those will be the processing technologies overview and the near-term development options overview.
And in that processing technologies report, are you going to deal at all with the gas to energy at the landfill, or any of those issues?
The landfill gas project, do you mean? Yeah. Landfill gas energy? No, that wouldn't be included in this. This would be the material coming in, not
the landfill. It's only the material coming in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are there any other questions? Comments? Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Andrea.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate that. So, okay. Now, Pat, it's you. You're up.
I am.
I forget which item you are now.
I don't know. I can't defer anymore. Holy cow. I think I actually have to do my bullets now.
Go for it.
So I believe Carlos mentioned this the last board meeting that you guys all had was for the rate analysis that we were actually having hire NewGen, which is pretty much the consultant we pretty much use to do our rate study or rate analysis that we do. We're finalizing that. We should have the final report to us by August 19th is the goal. Just to give you an idea of what we're looking at, though, is that we are looking at an increase that will be going out to our residential customers. As of right now, kind of looking at that, you're looking at almost $6.25 that we're looking at be going out, but it would be split over a two-year span. So 1 year, it would be like a $3.25, and the next year would be a $3. Don't hold my feet to the fire in those numbers because they're at a draft stage right now. I just wanted to share that with you as to kind of what we were looking at to be able to go over as far as the rate analysis coming bringing to us is that our O&M costs have gone up drastically. You know, our last increase was done in 2010.
Right.
And so, you know, over 11, 12 years, you know, our O&M costs have gone up. Our equipment costs have gone up basically from, you know, buying a truck for $250,000 are now we're paying $420,000. So you can see where those costs have drastically gone up. We're also going to be looking at being able to provide additional services to our customers, which we're kind of looking at, especially with homeless camps, you know, going everywhere and needing these extra cleanups to be done. We're going to stand up some new crews that this will help facilitate and pay for those services. So we can do a lot more of those cleanups quicker. So that's kind of the what we have. The other increase that we're looking at that we haven't had an increase is the landfill. The tipping fee at the gate rate has been $32, which has been also stagnant since 2010. Was the last increase there as well. And that was at $32. And we'll be looking to increase that as of January 1st and go from $32 to $35. So an increase of $3, which is just over 9%. And the last thing that we got back from NewGen as far as needing for a full cost recovery would be a 10% increase that we'll be looking to implement come January 1st of 2023. Is a 10% increase across the board for all commercial customers. So any roll-off, any front-load customers, their last increase that we had requested was, and put through was in 2016. So that'll get us basically to what we're looking at with these changes and increases would get us back up to where full cost recovery, we're able to get the equipment. We've been able to make budget and stay within the budget. But that was actually because we were reducing either services or reducing equipment. You know, we're no longer able to purchase 11 pieces of equipment. We might be able to purchase 6. Yeah, we stayed within our budget. You know, we didn't exceed our budget, but we also didn't provide the amount of equipment we need to continue to maintain the services we want to continue to provide. Question from Margo.
Of course. Last time we did a big commercial increase in costs, we lost a whole bunch of customers because Republic and Diggins and others came around and says, hey, I can give it to you for a cheaper price. In your modeling, have you put into any kind of loss of customers as impacting the amount that you would actually recover?
You know, we looked at that, Marco. I mean, it was very competitive in 2016 when we did that, and you weren't seeing the impact on the services and the labor factor that we're looking at that everyone's struggling from. We can't stop the customers from knocking at our door right now to the point where we're not even able to say we'll take on new customers a lot right now because
it's difficult for us to say we can afford to get new customers because we don't have the manpower or the equipment to do so. So even looking at the factor, we did a 10% increase, which they've all gone up at least 20 to 30%. We don't think we're going to see the fallout or the impact that we did back in 20. Actually, I think it was more so like 2013 when we saw the major drop. Yeah, but in 2016, we saw a small, but we didn't build in that impact on this time because I don't think we're going to see it, to be honest with you.
So you're telling me that Republic and Diggins and those others have already increased their prices 20, 30%?
Yes.
Some of the rates out in the county have gone up even more than that.
Yep. And a lot of it right now is actually the opportunity that they see the increase on fuel charges. If you look at any bills that have gone up there, they're probably closer to 30, 40%, only because the impact on the fuel surcharge that they're implying. We've been fortunate on our end as far as having, you know, that we got ahead of the ballgame and we switched to CNG when we did back in 2008. So our rate hasn't really gone jumped that high in CNG. It's mostly your liquid fuels. So kudos to the group back in the day that decided to switch to CNG. You know, it was the right thing to do, not only for on the fuel side, but on the environmental side. CNG is a much cleaner burning fuel than diesel. So to answer your question, I don't know. We didn't build in that impact because I don't think we're going to see it.
What about the landfill increase? Last time there was a big political brouhaha over increasing the landfill and then giving the prepaid numbers to the larger haulers and so forth. How are you approaching that?
So the same approach on that. The last time we increased, we went from $22 to $30. That was a huge jump when you were looking at 8 to 10. Now the Diggins was bought out by Republic. I don't think you're going to have that other second big group that's going to be so upset about it. And we're also going to increase the putter pay agreements that we have. They'll get an increase as well. But they're on an annual agreement and we only have three of them right now. So once those come up for renewal, we'll increase those as well.
So there are only three of those?
Yes.
And that's Republic and who else?
We have Waste Republic. Management? No. Waste Management doesn't. They actually don't bring us their disposal. Okay. We have with Republic, and then we have LDI, I believe it is, LDI, and Liberty. And Waste, they're the same company because they share. And then Waste Connection.
Okay. Never heard of them. And they're servicing county people primarily, or commercial, or?
A combination. And then the commercial, they actually partially in the city. And I would say that right now we're probably about 18 to 20% when it comes to commercial. As far as the market that we share in services would probably be closer to 20%. The rest would be all by those small private haulers, Waste Management, Republic. But they do. They provide a lot of residential service in the county and some services in the city.
And we should remind people who are newer that apartment buildings, anything above a duplex, can choose a commercial hauler. So when we're talking commercial, that includes all the apartment buildings.
Anything five and above is allowed to contract out.
Yeah.
And they don't all recycle. So,
all right. That's one of the problems.
Yep. I have a question, Pat. This actually is two questions. Number one is, with the change to having your glass recycling, you have to hand carry it to another location that may or may not be near you. Are we seeing people doing that a lot? And then the second part of that question is, because we're raising our rates, are we going to go back to letting people recycle in their recycle bin glass?
So that first question is yes, they are participating. With the glass bins are getting filled. We probably average right now about 45 to 48 tons a week of collecting glass. The second part of your question, are we going to go back to the curbside? It's a possibility. We're in the process of working with Republic on the agreement. I don't want to say it is or isn't going out because I really don't know at this time, but we're evaluating whether, you know, with these increases and these changes and looking to a zero waste program and as much as diversion and reuse is part of an action plan, climate action plan. I think all those are going to come back into play and say, you know what, yes, we do need to do that service. We do need to provide that. And it's going to cost X to be able to do so. So it is being looked at as to whether we get it back in there.
Okay, great.
So when they were doing these rate calculations, how did they look at glass?
It's just a roll-off services that we provide. So right. it's a haul.
Right. But if we were to go back to taking it at curbside, the big point was the weight of the glass going through the MRF is adds a lot of cost to the tipping fee compared to what we recover from it.
You're exactly right.
So how was that factored into the rate study?
It's not factored in there because all that's going to be dependent on the agreement with the Republic.
So the rate study does not think that there is going to be a glass diversion.
The rate study doesn't actually give you what the diversion is going to be or what the tipping fee is going to be. It's not that analysis. The rate study only is what your services you're providing. You're running X amount of equipment. You have X amount of employees. It just does your O&M basically and tells you this is what you need to recoup your costs and these are your capital projects. The waste, the Republic agreement is a complete side effect on there. What it does impact that I agree with you on that we will look at is the rebates. So are we getting a rebate or are we not getting a rebate? That's where it would come more into play on not on the price of the car, like glass. We're paying more for a tipping fee. That's where that would come more into play.
Right.
But our goal is to actually change the current agreement we have now so it's not a cost to the city. Even if it's at a break or even point, our residential fees and costs covered the services already. The only thing that we need to look at that, and what we look at is the revenue that we were getting from recycling is an offset. So we said, you know what, let's stop looking at it as an offset. Let's just say it doesn't exist. So let's cover all our costs as so we don't have an agreement. So all costs are covered, whether we're getting a rebate or whether we're not. So that's why it's more of an impact to us if we're not. If we continue paying into the program at the MRF, then it's going to be a negative. And our goal is to not have that.
Right. So that's my issue is right now we're paying $50,000 a month to back to the MRF, and that is a cost that goes with the recycling program in addition to the trucks and the drivers, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So anyway, all right, you've sort of answered the question, but it seems to me that's a bit up in the air. All right, I think the political fallout from $3.75 an increase in 1 year is going to be tremendous. And I'm glad I'm not on the council having to face it. We talked about 99 cents over 5 years.
Up to $1.50, remember?
That yeah.
Now is too much. So that was all pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's like I had mentioned, you're right. I mean, but unfortunately, it would have been a lot smaller increase had we done something over several years back.
Yep.
When you're looking at a 10 or 12 year plan, well, yeah, I mean, there's no way for me to really sugarcoat it. I mean, had we done $1 or $2, 8 years ago, yeah, I would probably be going after $1.50. But all I can do is tell you, this is what our costs are. This is the amount of equipment we need to purchase. Here's our bottom line. How do I get that?
Yeah.
Or I reduce services and we don't want to reduce service. We want to increase services.
Well, that certainly is a problem that Tucson Water has faced over and over again by delaying increases in water rates. You get hammered with the same kind of large jumps, which cause a lot of political fallout.
That'll be the thing that we need to let them know that, let consumers know that, hey, look, we had a plan, but the city council said no. And now you're paying $6.50.
And the good thing is that's going to be over, it'll be 625, but that'll be over a 2-year plan, which is good.
Still.
So 1 year. Yeah, I know. I agree. Yeah. It's a big impact, but yeah.
That'll be and a everybody challenge. Wants us to recycle like Portland, and they and they pay. They pay big money each month. So yeah.
Yeah. Even, you know, it's funny you mentioned that, because even when you look at that, you look at our rate, we're at 1675. You know, that's going to get us in 2 years, we'll be up, you know, at the 23 mark. And I still look at other areas, small ones like Sierra Vista and those, and they're, you know, already at that rate, if not higher. I mean, you have some that are, you know, $40. If you talk like Oregon and that, I think they pay like $48 a month. So, yeah. So I, you know, hats off, I think, to us to be able to maintain our rate at 1675 for such a long period. And unfortunately, we're just at that point where we need to request the increase.
Okay.
All right.
Next one, the neighborhood recycling centers. That came up. Let's see.
So the recycling centers, yeah. I don't know. I think we probably talked at our waste diversion group as well. We shut down two of the neighborhood recycling centers. Mansfield and Eastside Ward Office, Ward 2. We ended up closing those two sites and NRC sites. We kept the glass at the both sites because that seems to be working out. And but the at the NRC sites where we had the cardboard and recyclables, both of them had turned into little mini transfer stations. Unfortunately, the bad behavior was very hard to control. As much as we would like to offer those recycling, especially the and I think when we think back and look at the neighborhood recycling centers, they were originally stood up to hopefully help some of those apartment complexes that were able to recycle some of those multifamily housing that weren't able to recycle. It wasn't really built around for businesses or for county residents to use, because county residents use them as well. So going back and really looking at what the program was stood up for, it wasn't based for holding trash pickup, and it can't be, because then we're at a liability when you're holding trash there. And we're ended up having sending a truck almost daily to go out there and clean up from so much debris that was left out there. You have sofas, mattresses, garbage bags, landscape material. And yet you had some residents that were doing the right thing and was actually putting recycling out there. Unfortunately, they're filling up with trash. The recycling is ending up on the ground. So kind of when we looked at it, we said, and getting a lot of complaints from residents, they want to drive around and see that in their neighborhood as well. So it was, we looked at it, it was a very tough decision to do. So we closed both sites down. It's been roughly about 2 weeks now. We still get a little bit of debris up there, but nothing as to what we had before. A couple of piles that we're still going out there, and I think that's going to be just like when we did Jacob's Park. It took a while for everyone to realize there weren't big material there. But the biggest thing is, as far as looking at these NRC sites, is that looking at seeing what was dropped off were a lot of commercial businesses that were bringing their cardboard. And really, to be honest with you, businesses have the opportunity to hire someone to provide that service instead of bringing it to NRC sites. You know, we provide that service. I know all the private sectors out there offer the service, but there is a charge for it. So they do have the ability, if they want to continue to recycle, they do have an option. And the same with apartments. Apartments also have the option to do so, as they're usually being provided service, refuse service, through either us or through a private hauler. And all of us offer recycling as well if they want containers. If they are our customer, we offer a pretty good discount, you know, as far as providing recycling. So looking at it, there is opportunities. The residents, every residential customer that we have or provide service to pretty much has an option of using a blue bin at home. Really don't have to go to NRC. So they have the option as well. So we would really look at this, you know, who's really utilizing these sites and who has the options and what options they have available to them. So it was a tough decision, but we chose to close those two sites. we'll evaluate the other. I think there's five more. We'll probably never close down Los Reales because that is a good site. If someone's coming in, they can go to landfill and still bring the recyclables. But we're going to evaluate the other five sites as well and determine if we want to continue to provide that service as well. Questions?
Part of it is also the issue of education. If we've never done door knot hangers, for instance, for the surrounding apartment buildings, saying, you know, if you don't have recycling, or only to the ones where it's obvious they don't have recycling, that you can join in with the rest of the community in fighting climate action, blah, 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 by going to the neighborhood recycling. We've never had the personnel, we've never had the time, we've never had the money to do those kinds of things. So I think it's probably not surprising that the NRCs have not succeeded. You know, we had hoped that that would just osmose amongst the people, that those were available for that, for those who wanted to do the right thing. But we didn't make any effort, I think is fair to say, to really explain to people why they were there and what the opportunity that provided for them. It was one of those ideas that sounded good at the time.
I think you'd hit the nail on the head there, Margo, because I think actually enhance what we're talking about as far as enhancing or expanding our current programs. I think it would be just that. I mean, every time we look at that, do we got to increase more trucks, more routes, more services? Well, to me, one of those services would be hiring staff that can go out and educate the public more on recycling. Part of the zero waste, to me, of zero waste program going forward is going to probably look for that. How do we educate the public a little more? That's going to be a portion of that.
It's going to be a big part of it. You know, I can see a staff of 10 people, 15 people who do nothing but education and door knocking and looking at the cans and evaluating. I mean, we had the feet on the ground program that showed when you gave direct communication to the people on what the mistakes they were making, they changed and the contamination route rate dropped. And I still think it was a mistake of the city council not to add four or five inspectors to your to your budget to take on that, to get after this 28%, 29%.
That had a positive effect. We saw that. It helped
documented it.
So see, I'd like to see some of this increased money go towards the education. And I still think ES needs a mascot. You know, why can't we do commercials on TV? You know, have a little ditty song that the, you know, the water's been doing forever and ever. So
eat the beak.
Yep. So we've talked about that before, the mascot.
So that concludes my bullets.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Let's move on to item 7, the subcommittee reports. And Margo, you're up for waste diversion, collections, and education.
Yeah, and I have a problem in that I put together my report and my printer's not working. So I was going to bring it up on my computer, and I'm not sure I know how to do that. I guess I can minimize. Oh, I know what I can do. I minimize this,
and then
here you are. Get rid of that. Get rid of this, and now I can find my report. Okay, report. Where are you? Because we did cover quite a few things in a somewhat abbreviated meeting. Nope, that's the agenda. That's not what I wanted. Sorry, people. I was going to have this all set up. Here it is. We met on August 3rd at 3:30 with all members present, Chris Yarder, Yolanda Herrera, and me. Minutes of June 1st were approved without objection. I showed a compostable paper cup, which is being used in California. However, need a commercial composting facility to break it down. So it's probably not something we can advocate for in Tucson, but a lot of us dream of the time when we can go to Tucson Meet Yourself and also the street fairs, the Fourth Avenue street fairs, and require that the materials that they hand out the food and drink in are all compostable as one of our goals to zero waste. So maybe that'll be one of our aspirational things in the report. Christina Polesgrove presented the MRF report. June had an increase of 4.3% in daily tons, with a decrease in required payments by the city of 1%. However, it still was $50,144.08 we had to pay, which is a little bit we were talking about around the budget stuff. The excess trash charge is $21,083, and the April audit established a rate of 28%. The next audit is to be held August 17th. We're hoping it'll go down, but I guess that's probably an aspirational hope. Some commodity prices went up: paper, number two HDPE natural bottles, rigid plastic. Some commodity prices went down: aluminum, tin, number two pigmented bottles. The biggest money maker is OCC, or old cardboard and other papers. It brought in $256,478. The city is still reviewing the amendment to the contract with the MRF and hasn't presented it to them yet. The current amendments expired July 1st, but were extended to September. The goal is for the effort to be a partnership where everyone has some risk. The new amendments would last for the remaining 5 years of the contract. So maybe when I'm done, Pat can bring us up to date whether there's any movement on that, but it's going slowly. Public outreach has been very slow during the summer. On November 5th, there'll be another zero waste event. All the partners from the one before are on board and new ones are asking to join. Most of Christina's time has been spent preparing for next year. That's the brush and bulky mail out with all the dates by neighborhood, the HHW schedule for where the pickups will be on the second Saturdays, tree cycle sites and dates, and up-to-date information for the new areas in the city which are being added into the both recycling and trash pickup. And of course, putting the information on the recycle coach. The letter for brush and bulky will contain a reminder to put out the material only 2 weeks before the pickup date, or you may be subject to a fine. And we had quite a discussion about that fine. There is an issue with apparently the current verbiage in Chapter 15, which is regarding waste and code enforcement, about fines. So we're not positive that you could actually be fined by putting it out too early, but I know many of us would like to see some sort of pressure on people not to put their stuff out too early, because it makes the city look, neighborhoods look really trashy. Pat reported on the new landfill cell 4B. They are finalizing the plans that include roads, entrance, stockpiling the soil being excavated, and stormwater management. Another subdivision is being built on the landfill border, so ES is working on being a good neighbor by putting up a border and planting trees. Homeless camps and cleanups. Four more ESOs and four more ESWs are being hired. They will be out doing cleanups. ES is a part of a homeless team out of the city manager's office. Departments involved are housing, the police department, transportation, PDSD, and ES. The protocol for handling complaints is being finalized. ES will not be a part of the outreach to the homeless camps or logging them. Their job will be to come in after others have followed the protocols of notification, offers of assistance, and removal of the people, and ES gets to clean up what's left behind. An interesting story we were told is that Tucson Water noticed that one of its reservoirs was draining much faster than normal. An investigation found that a nearby large homeless camp had tapped into the reservoir and had running water. Obviously that got stopped. Pat had no new information about plans for handling EV batteries at the end of their life. It is a question of nationwide interest of people in this business overall. An electric trash truck, I think we've talked about this before, costs about $735,000. and takes 12 to 14 months for delivery. So it's almost twice as much for an electric vehicle as for a CNG vehicle. Code enforcement. Laurie Pumphrey reported they had 4,443 cases as of the meeting date. That is on par for this time of year. They have one new hire, three new inspectors. They're hoping for more. Code enforcement does get involved in the homeless issue, the cleanup, but also transients have been setting fires and breaking into vacant houses. And so then code enforcement gets called in. We discussed a case of a large stash of tires at 4301 East Irvington. The owners were taken to court for not cleaning up the tires. They sold the property. Code enforcement took the new owners to court. And as of July 27, 2022, all the tires are gone. And we saw pictures of the now vacant lot, which will obviously be available for something else. Where did the tires go? Well, best as Laurie knew, they were sent out of town. I don't know where they went. We have a long line of long list of items for the next meeting on September the 7th. We want to talk some more about food trucks, an update on the internal audit report for code enforcement. That's been going on for 2 years, I think. Issue of home occupations, the landfill plans, EV battery disposal, MRF reports and contract amendments, HHW reports, and the Ward 6 program on collecting plastics, how that's going, and the role that ES is playing in that pilot program. So that was our meeting. Any comments?
Hi, Margot. In terms of the public education, I was wondering, have they ever talked about how people can pay less for their garbage pickup if they choose a smaller bin? Because I don't think a lot of people are aware of that, but they could save a little bit of money if they go with a smaller bin.
It's a good point. We have talked about it periodically. Probably when the rate increases go in and those will be sent out, I would think, be officially to people with the bills, that would be the time to bring that up again. And we may see some changes at that point, depending, maybe Pat can tell us in the rate increase if that would include also the smaller bins. But it's a good point, Susanna. We need to emphasize that again. We forget, you know, that Tucson is a very mobile town, and so we have people constantly coming in. So we need to keep reminding people of these things, which even those that have been in place for a long time. Good point. Pat, do you want to comment on that?
No, I think she raised a really good point. I think we will have to re-educate, I think, everyone on that as the fees go up, and say if that is a concern, you do have that option available to you to get a smaller container and reduce your rate. So Susanna, a good point. We'll make sure that we do that as far as part of our outreach.
I have a question. Is there some sort of program with TUSD regarding recycling?
Yes, we have a firm, Environmental Educators, I think it's called EEA or something like that, who've been doing this for a large number of years. So that's our education process where they come into the classroom, I think it's about the third grade, and they have a whole curriculum that's set up that they do, and the teachers sign up at the beginning of the year to get on. We usually get more requests than we actually have people to do it. And then they've been developing more age-appropriate programs for middle school and high school. And I'm not sure if those are fully implemented at this time with the COVID. There's been, of course, the hiccup of virtual, but it's been a very successful program. And the teachers that do it year after year because it's well done. They love it and the kids love it.
It would be, to me, it would seem like it would be a good starting point for some of these younger kids to indoctrinate their parents as to what should be done. And maybe they could be the close contacts, the real change agents that we really need for this.
You're right.
Well, Christina Polesgrove does a lot with the elementary school kids and the middle school kids. So she's got a lot of gatherings where they talk about that stuff. Also, there's teacher materials,
right,
that they can add to their curriculum in their classrooms. So that's a big help too.
Yeah, they can do it themselves, or they can have our this consultant group that we've been using for a large number of years that will actually come into the classroom and do the presentations and all. And Sherry Ludwig, who does the HHW, I know I've had her come to some of my some club meetings, and she's a very effective speaker. So we could do a lot more, you know, with Rotary and Civitan and Lions and all those people, you know, sending out letters and telling them we've got speakers, because they're always looking for speakers, and give them the spiel. We just, again, it's ES is just so understaffed. I mean, they literally have Christina. And, you know, she's got a whole lot of things every to do year. As I was just mentioning, all the planning for starting January 1st.
Yes.
I just want to add that it's part of Tucson Clean and Beautiful's contract under environmental services to educate schools, children, neighborhoods, etc. And they sit up at the home shows as well as attend many of the resource fairs that people have around the city of Tucson.
Good point, Yolanda.
And when I taught at Spino High School, we started recycling in the mid-90s. So,
yeah,
that was fun. All right.
Is there someone else?
Okay. Let's go to item 8, future agenda items.
Do we think that the zero waste will be ready for a little more detailed presentation on those two next plans that they're working on, or should we wait until October for them?
Let's wait till October. I think let us get some of that information that we're going to be getting in the second to the third week of September, and then we'll report back out again in October.
And I would like her to do a little more summary of the report rather than just having us read it and go over it. You know, it was, as I say,
that wasn't her. I kind of gave a direction on that as to what to bring, you know, the initial introduction, just so you have a real quick high level introduction as what HDR is actually doing for zero waste. So I'll take the blame on that. That was actually under my direction, but we'll give a little bit more detail in the October.
Detail references. You know, sorry, I'm a science person. I just have to know where they're getting these numbers. And so
you science group, I tell you.
Hey, Ryan's with me on that. So
yeah. Thank you.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. it's way too vague. I'm just really having a hard time with it. So
yeah,
I want to see who's writing this stuff. You know?
I understand. We didn't want to get into too far down the weeds. I think today was just give you a high level intro as to what the zero waste and who's doing it, and we'll go from there.
Okay. Okay. And I, of course, would like to see ESAC have more input. All right. Future agenda items once more.
Can I?
Oh, yes, Elvira.
Okay. I was wondering, I know I see Nadia from Ward 6 here. Hi. But I know the Ward 6 program with the plastic, like collecting that. I was wondering if we could get a presentation on that process or how it's going. I know I don't know if I missed anything, but I kind of would like to hear more about it and see how it's being implemented.
And I was going to introduce Nadia because she has come to several of our meetings, and,
yeah.
And she's a new aide at Ward 6. Hi, good to see you in person.
So, yeah, I think for the future agenda, yeah, if it's, you know, possible for, you know, us Ward 6 to give a little bit like, you know, presentation about our pilot project, that also, yeah, we can do that for sure.
Okay. I have a question regarding that. That's just any plastic that's considered not usable in the regular bins, is that correct? Or
yes, yes.
You just put all plastic in there?
Yeah, so we always
we can't, since this is not on the agenda, we cannot talk about this.
Right.
We will put it on for a future agenda item and you can ask those questions then.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Okay. All right, anything else? If not, let's
Yes. We get things resolved with those food trucks, the ones that were leaving the.
It didn't end up being on the agenda. So let's put the food trucks on.
Yeah, because I have a question regarding them as well.
Okay, because I know Yolanda had requested that be on the agenda. So let's make sure that gets on it. Thanks for the reminder. Okay, well, there's nothing else. Let's go to item 10, adjournment.
How about call to the audience?
Oh, well, I kind of included my introduction to Nadia in that. So any call to the audience? Okay, adjournment. Let's go. It's 5:18. Thank you. This was an interesting meeting. Good to see you.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Bye. Thanks, everybody. Take care. Okay, bye. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.